Well, I mean,
can I have some?
See, we've already gone 10 minutes, and I've already realized I need to start drinking for this episode.
Oh, was it me?
Are we that bad?
Yes.
It was me.
You're horrible, horrible people.
You okay. Love me.
You started it.
Someone's gotta love
yes,
me.
Yes, I did start this podcast with the rest of you.
Someone's gotta love me.
No, you made me grumpy.
You love
first.
Me, right, Callie?
You're always grumpy.
I'm not always grumpy.
Grumpy.
You don't have a coffee, so clearly you're grumpy.
But I just finished like a whole one.
Yeah, exactly.
Callie.
You're out of coffee. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Fangs and Fonts. I'm Ocean.
I'm Voice.
I'm Yanara.
I'm Roland.
And it's been a while since we've had the whole group together.
So, yay, Ferret's back!
Woo.
Yep. It's been a while. I don't know what to do anymore.
Right.
It's been like 2 months since I've recorded.
Stare at us dourly.
It was a good break. But now we're back.
Well, it wasn't a break to them.
Yeah. We didn't exactly go on hiatus. We just had other episodes.
Yay!
So this week, we're talking about writing things that you may or may not know about.
That specifically. Write what you do know, write what you don't know.
And whether or not you should do either.
Just stop, really. If you can't figure it out, just stop, right?
I can see the brain aneurysm.
So yeah, writing what you know, writing what you don't know. A lot of the time people just tell you to write what you know. What does that mean? Is it something you should do? Why can't you write stuff you don't know?
Does it mean you should never write fantasy?
Exactly.
I think it's a cop-out saying you should never write what you don't know.
Well, I do tend to hate people that say it.
It's like, what? It just sounds lazy to me.
So let's skip then to writing what you don't know.
Okay.
And jump right in.
So, writing what you know.
I said don't know.
No. We're writing what you know.
But it's listed this way in the show notes. So.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
It is now.
Writing what you know.
Yes. God.
That's...
You're agreeing with each other. I hope you realize that, right?
I love it when they do this.
I'm agreeing with Tarl, disagreeing with the Ocean.
Okay. So, writing what you know. Take, for example, the thing that most people, when they end up getting into the habit of writing, most will end up starting off writing their favorite genres, the stuff that they've been reading since childhood, the stuff that they've always loved, which is why most people get into the whole writing thing through fanfics, is because that's what they're
I pretty much agree with you on that one. Think about what the fundamental kind of story that people start with is almost always involves the Mary Sue character, the Gary Stu character, because these people are writing strictly about things that they've experienced and things that they want to experience. It's sort of like the baseline of writing what you know.
Well, it's like my intro into writing furry fiction was writing Sonic fanfic because I watched the cartoon, not the recent one, but the old one
from the 80s.
I started with Digimon fanfic.
And then I wrote Sailor Moon fanfic because we wanted a more violent, warlike Sailor Moon. My friends and that's literally why we ended up.
Sailor Moon is too much for girls. I'm gonna write my own with hookers and blackjack and violent murder.
Missiles.
All sorts of bleeding.
You know what? The girls are now a bunch of commandos with motorcycles and transform into giant robots that interlock. Wait,
not enough people die in Sailor Moon. There's not enough Cthulhu.
More tentacles!
To be fair, I did the same thing with my Sonic fanfic. I made it more violent. So
I think that's that's what a lot of people tend to do when they start writing their fanfictions too, is they're like, I want to make this grittier and like darker. And
well, it's like the fanfic I was reading at the time had Tails being gay continually. And it was just
I wonder
like,
where that came from.
Yeah.
I used to write Biker Mice from Mars fanfics.
Jeez, I feel all I did was Legend of Legaia.
I was all about the game slash
I was like, did I actually write any technically? Yes, I did, because we took the three Biker Mice from our characters and we put them in an entirely different world.
I think another good point that this kind of demonstrates is that writing what you know isn't strictly about the experiences that you've experienced in real life. It's about the scenarios and the types of situations that you've also played out in your head and you've spent a lot of time thinking about.
I don't even want to know where the Tailspin fanfics come in on that one, then.
That's one of the things, is with, as a kid, I read a lot of fantasy. Again, as I mentioned in one of the previous ones, Dragonlance. And a lot of the stuff that I ended up writing as a kid tied into that after I got through all the fanfics is when I started writing seriously, quotation marks.
Seriously.
I was writing fantasy because, and my brother did the same thing. He wrote a lot of fantasy because that's what we grew up on. That's what we knew. We knew this is what a dragon was like. This is what a sword, like, this is what a sword fight looks like because we've read 80 gajillion of them.
And if you kind of think about a lot of intangible concepts that people really, really enjoy, like take pretty much any of the furry kinks that just aren't physically possible. There's a certain trend.
You just haven't tried hard enough.
There's a certain trend that goes along with those kinds of interests. You know, whether it just be furry in general, whether it be any sort of, you know, not physically possible act.
Yeah.
Macro core.
And, you know, like, everybody sort of has a general consensus on what that particular concept should be, and that also would count as writing what you know.
Another thing you get when it comes to writing what you know in regards to a genre is the payoffs of that genre. You know, when you're writing fantasy, what generally a fantasy reader is looking for, because you yourself are a fantasy reader. Same for YA, same for science fiction. That's why most of the advice you get when someone says, hey, you should write this genre, is read the books in that genre, is so that you know what you're writing about.
I wonder what examples we could possibly give for this scenario.
Yes. Going back to our lovely whipping horse of my Cthulhu Punk story, where it was written by me, who's a Cthulhu reader, a Lovecraftian mythos reader and writer. I know where all the payoffs are. I know everything about it. The thing is, though, as soon as I gave it to beta readers, people who don't follow the Cthulhu genre or the Lovecraft mythos, when they read it, they didn't get the payoffs they were expecting for the story because, well, one, they're not aware of it, and two, they're looking for different payoffs in the story.
You get different Easter eggs.
Well, the thing is I forgot the payoffs for the readers who don't know the genre.
Mm-hmm.
This was a punk story. There are certain payoff points for a punkish story that weren't in that story because I was too busy hitting the Cthulhu plot points and payoff points for that thing, which is why the story wasn't as successful as it could have been.
It was very confusing.
Yes.
But writing what you know isn't just, you know, I like this, so I'll write that. It's also taking experiences you've had and adapting them to a story. You can take a cruise, you know. I'm sure you guys, when you went on your cruise, like, you can be like, yeah, you know, it was great because you go, you see the beach, you see the sun, you're on the boat, there's lots of food. And you're like, that's okay, that's typical. But you also come back with a bunch more stories of things that you never knew would happen on a cruise until they actually happened to you.
True.
And those are really the interesting things that you want to talk about, aren't they?
Yeah.
They are. It's the new experiences that you can't get strictly by research.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can research a cruise ship to death. That's easy. But what you can't do is actually get the experience. I mean, nowhere on the cruise ship does it tell you, you know, the floor-by-floor-by-floor detailed running track of jokes from this drunk guy that's probably worth more money than you've seen in the last 10 years. Every time the door opens, he thinks he's the funniest card in the world, and it's like, the situation is so ridiculous, you can't help but laugh.
Yeah, there's so many things that won't be on the brochure.
Yeah.
Well, it's like why most paranormal / urban fantasy writers now, once they get into a successful series, you find them at the gun range shooting pistols and whatnot, is because sure, their first book or second book are talking about, you know, they talk about shooting guns, but that at that point they want to actually have that experience to be able to relate it in the story. What does it feel like to shoot a gun?
You can... That, and people get really militant about their guns.
Yes.
So much. You know, no, I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. If you're writing about a gun, you'd better know how a gun works.
Well, if you don't, it's not hard to figure out.
I point the open end at the other person.
But the thing is if you don't, you better have a beta reader who does.
Yes.
Because they will tell you the difference between a clip and a magazine.
As you've been told.
As I've been told. But that's the thing, is it's like my pure silver katana example from the one Urban Fantasy where I'm reading. It's like you clearly
and
have...
And silver bullets.
Well, the silver bullets you can sort of have, but a katana made of pure silver as a viable killing weapon.
A bullet is a one-time use.
Yes.
A katana, on the other hand, you don't want one-time use katana.
Katana is supposed to be...
Ka-ching, snap! Ka-ching, snap! Ka-ching! You've just got this holster, this quiver of katanas that you're just whipping out. I'm writing that down for another series.
Like, I bet you there's a niche for that.
Like, yes, when she ends up hitting another... parries another sword strike with the edge of her katana, she mentions that it deforms. Great.
Well done!
So... the person in your basement who is constantly repairing your katana
is going to use
how are they repairing your katana? This thing is, you know, it's kind of hard to get that giant sword blade divot out of your blade.
You have a bad sword and you should feel bad.
Exactly.
I'm going to start.
But anyway,
it sounds like they should, you know, learn a thing or two about knife sharpening.
Now, were they doing silver because they're fighting something that's weak
Vampires.
To silver?
They're fighting vampires and werewolves.
And which, like, you told me they had a silver sword. I'm like, and I didn't know any context. I'm just like, if you want to do that, you're just going to make something out of steel and then coat it in silver.
They're fighting vampires.
And you're like, yeah, that's what it's supposed to be. So
they're fighting vampires and werewolves. And yeah, they should have done silver coated steel, but instead it's pure silver, which in this book, silver is illegal. You apparently can't have any silver in all of the United States.
So much better instead of having a purely silver katana. You have one made out of a material that is legal, and then you coat it with, like, you know, just the tip with silver or something.
Just
the blade.
Exactly.
Just a line.
We'll
ignore the fact
silver.
That she mentions previously, before she became a vampire who hunts other vampires, really original, that she and her brother had Bowie knives that they cut off the heads of the vampires they were hunting. So apparently decapitation with a non-silver weapon is lethal to vampires. So my question is why are you using a silver katana when...
the Bowie knife worked just fine.
Exactly.
Or a katana that could cut people's heads off.
Because you have to have the katana.
Yeah, exactly.
The katana that doesn't break.
Machete!
We're getting a little off topic.
Yes,
here,
but case in point, this is what happens when you write something you don't know or don't
understand.
When
you've never even tried to research the genre, the history. Well,
see, like, that's kind of an example of writing what you know, but at the same time, like, they seem perfectly aware that silver is not a strictly viable substance for a katana.
Well... even if you're going to write something you entirely don't know, there's still going to be elements and interactions that will be something that's familiar to you. I at least believe that. I think I've had people tell me, it's like, no, everything about this I've never known, anything experienced or anything.
You can always infer on a subject that you don't really know about.
Well, it's the same sense that everything you write has a small piece of you in it.
Yes. I'll agree with that.
Like, there's not really... any subject that you don't entirely know about. If you know about it as a concept, you know about it to some degree.
Well, like, if your story is about two people who are out in space with lasers and all these a bunch of things that we've never experienced or had, you still have two people. And those two people interact. And you have had to interact with someone in your lifetime.
At least we would hope so.
I can't think of a situation where you can't. But let's not go there. So even still, there's always going to be something that you should know about in your story. And all those elements that you don't know, you can still research and find out.
there are certain things that you're going to be able to sort of envision a lot easier, even if you don't know about it, than something that's a lot more factual. Say, if you don't know about guns, you should research guns. If you don't know about space travel, maybe you should read up on space travel. You know, sci-fi, you can get away with a lot in sci-fi, but having some sort of knowledge about the science behind it could drastically help your reading or your writing.
Because there'll always be those people who end up reading it and understand it, and they'll get the suspension.
That's not how it works.
Well, let's take being out in space with your hands not covered by any kind of gloves while you're saving a person, and then your eyes filming over as your blood vessels burst, and then once you get put inside, there's no damage whatsoever to your eyes.
Let's take, for example, something like Isaac.
Can you tell what eyes?
I want to rebuttal to that, but that would be spoilers.
I know how you're going to rebuttal, and I understand that, and it does. It does.
Anyways,
let's take, for example, Isaac Asimov and the geostationary satellites.
Yes.
Something that, in theory, he should have known nothing about because they didn't exist until he wrote about them. So,
same with Jules Verne, Arthur C. Clarke.
Didn't Jules Verne, like, knock that whole idea out of the water? Leonardo da Vinci did a lot of that with his plans.
He built a helicopter, come on.
Well, with Jules Verne... Well, he there was a lot of science behind what he wrote because he wanted it to make sense. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, he was so close to where actual things happen, like the launch of the space shuttles and all that, is because he figured out, well, the best place to launch would be near the equator and this part of the area and da 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 da.
Well, that kind of goes back to what was covered beforehand, is if drawing fantasy. Yeah, there's no dragons, but learn how to draw lizards and go from there.
See, now the funny thing I find about fantasy is that it doesn't have to be based in any way on real life.
Look at furries.
Yeah, like, if you think about, like, some people with extremely abstract concepts that have nothing to do with anything that exists,
yeah,
you know, actually, in today's world.
That's one of the things we should point out, because I don't think we actually have that point on the recording earlier, is the there is an analogy that I have for writing what you know. And I did 4 years of fine arts, and throughout most of it, I had teachers who were like, don't draw fantasy, don't draw fantasy, you don't understand fantasy, there's no proper model for fantasy, just write or draw things that you knew. Until I had this one drawing teacher who's like, he explained it as, the reason they don't want you to draw dragons and all that is because they want you to learn lizards and animals and musculature and all that first, so that when you do end up drawing a dragon, you understand things like how its muscles work, certain reptile looks that you can incorporate into your dragon, because the best dragons, like the Harry Potter dragons in the movies, are ones that are based off of real concepts and real facts.
Well, they're more enjoyable to look at, too.
That was kind of the thing I never got about analogies like that, though, is because fantasy doesn't have to be based on real life.
That's why it's
fantasy. Dragons don't have to be based on lizards.
Which is one of the counterpoints that I've read before we were recording this episode, was there is an author who said, you know, you're always told write what you know. How do you write fantasy? Because fantasy is strictly about something that you can't know. Well,
it just seems to entirely defeat the purpose of writing fantasy.
Yes. But the thing is with fantasy, you can write things that you know into something that is the fantastic, and thus you don't know. Yeah. Because the more...
You can't.
The best lies have that sliver of truth to it. So your best stories that are fantasy are the ones that you end up basing slivers of it off of truth.
But, like, those things don't have to be related. You know, you can write something that is entirely out there, or you can write something that is largely based off of real life, but is still in some way, like,
entirely fictional.
No, that's, you know, the main reason that I write is because I can make entirely implausible situations happen if I want them to.
Yeah. Well, take Star Wars. Technically, it's a completely impossible situation.
Unless we actually had midichlorians.
Well, see, we do, we just haven't activated them.
We do, we just haven't invented them yet.
But that's, see, that's, and see, and there, therein goes kind of actually completely counter to my point. Is that is Lucas inserting quotations, science into it to make it more believable when, quite frankly, everyone was okay with the Force being explained as it's a thing people do.
It's a mystic force.
It's a life force around everyone.
The Force could have been entirely magical and nobody would have given a shit.
Yeah. As soon as midichlorians come around, everyone gave a shit because they were like, what the F are you doing?
He could have even been like stuck with aura manipulation and people would just went, eh, okay.
Yeah.
But you start adding a biological degree and a biological factor into it, and then people start. There's something, pardon the pun, physical for them to grasp onto at that point. Mm-hmm. And
you know, I just think there's a point to which saying a wizard did it is entirely acceptable.
A wizard did it.
Why the Force? Wizards.
Before
Jedi's, there were wizards that gave humans the power to do this. Died off.
Well,
and then Star Wars.
Well,
but wizards.
Look at early science fiction, especially transportation to a new realm like the Gore series and the John Carter series
wizards
and all
did
that.
It.
Well, the thing is, though, is that you have these mythical figures who are essentially wizards that have, it's the whole technology and magic thing, where it's just they are essentially, we're not going to explain our science. It's so sciencey, it's magic.
Yeah.
Poof, done.
And yeah, I do totally appreciate that sentiment that magic is just science we don't understand. Because even magic has to have its own strict convention. Sometimes magic just conjures out of nothing.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a price for it. Sometimes it requires an intangible life force. But it is, to a point, a science that exists in that world.
Now, with writing something that another thing that you get out of it is themes that you're comfortable writing, because it's either themes that you've experienced or themes that you've read about and you're comfortable writing about. I'm not comfortable writing coming out stories because I've never come out. I wouldn't know where to begin other than to do a whole bunch of interviews with people that I know that have come out.
Maybe you should just come out.
But by that same token,
high five for the fiance.
The beard.
It's the beard.
Yeah.
He has to have two beards.
Rawr.
By that same token, would you not write horror because you have no experience with killing people?
Well,
horror is not necessarily about killing people.
It's
being terrified.
And at one point or another,
which
we've all been
which you would arguably have experience with.
He's marrying me. What kind of being terrified did you miss?
There have been points in my life where I have been ultimately terrified. There have been points where I've been scared. There's points where I've been threatened and uncomfortable. And that's what I draw upon when I end up writing said situations.
I should write more horror then.
I don't think it should be looked at as, I'm not going to write this because I'm not familiar with it. I think you should be looking at it the other way, going, I would like to write more horror because I enjoy horror, and I would like to put more horror out there.
Yes.
That there are a lot of points within stories that you do have aspects with as opposed to the ones that you don't.
Yeah. And the fact is if you're writing something that it's the same difference of drawing something you know. If you've drawn anime your entire life, drawing something that's not anime takes a significantly more amount of time, more amount of research, things like that. With writing something that you don't know, like, for example, for me writing erotica, it takes me a lot longer than it is for me to sit down and write an MF erotica because there's certain things that I have to make sure I'm getting right, that I'm making, I have to work out the situations, and it's because I don't know it.
And I mean, and something like that is completely benign for me, because I have experience on both sides.
Yes. But sometimes, if I sit down, if I'm looking for calls of submissions, I will select stuff that I know how to write or is on the edge of what I know to write because...
You have a relatability at that point.
Well, at the same time, I know a lot of gay writers who they just want to write gay. They're not comfortable writing straight or they don't really want to read that.
Yep.
It's the same thing.
But so do you think that maybe writing what you do know sort of is kind of a trap to, you know, sort of writing into your own...
Writing yourself into a corner?
Yeah.
I think it can be. It's very... I mean, it's like, as I said, like drawing anime all your life. It's great if that's all you're going to do.
If that's all you want to do.
That's all you want to do. If that's where your career wants to go. But the fact is the way to reach more of an audience is to write a variety of subjects, to draw a variety of subjects. And thus, it's writing just what you know and not testing yourself. You're not necessarily, you're still growing as a writer, but you're not growing as fast or as much as you could experimenting with other genres, other subjects, other themes, things like that.
I might have to disagree with that just on the degree that not everybody wants to... I guess the best term for that would be jack of all trades, master of none. So you can piss poor write all these genres when really your heart lies in this one specific area, but according to you, you can't sit in that one specific area because you're not quote-unquote growing at that point. But if that's what you want to write, stay with it. If that's where your audience is, if that's where your heart is, if that's where your interest's in, then by all means, don't push yourself to a degree that you're not happy with just to say you can do it all if that's not what you want to do. I know one woman that's been drawing anime styles for the last 25 years, and blow me sideways, she's amazing at it. If someone said, can you draw me a real-life cat? She'd be like, why? I can make $120 doing a two-person character anime commission on DeviantArt. Why would I waste my time drawing a realistic cat for $10? It's because she's good at what she's doing, and she likes what she's doing. She's never felt the need to push beyond what she likes.
But I'm going to draw a different parallel to people that draw. And, you know, there's one of the biggest things in practicing your craft when it comes to either writing or drawing is that people tend to stagnate, and that, you know, maybe they don't have an issue with it, but there are several artists that I can, you know, list off the top of my head, which I won't, that they, all of their characters, all of their species, all of their people become the same person. They become bland. They become, like, completely uninteresting characters. And so, yeah, maybe your friend can draw.
If your character isn't a dog, don't get this person to draw.
Yeah.
Because they're just going to end up drawing
a dog. Yeah, like, they can only draw canines, and, you know, maybe in the same way that hypothetically, Tarl could only write Cthulhu in the same way that I could only write depressing love stories. you want to break out of that mold, and you know it's not necessarily about sucking at everything, and or being awesome at one thing, but it's about, you know, the more you're writing, you are progressing, you are becoming better, and.
True, but you, I would hope that if all you do is that one style.
That
but
one
I would
thing.
Hope that at one at that certain point where you really aren't doing anything new, that you would realize that's when you have to expand. I mean, I'm not saying she draws the same thing over and over. I mean, she's constantly expanding with style. She's constantly looking at new anime. I mean, what's
right,
to say that, you know, just because I'm writing vampire stuff right now doesn't mean I can't push into werewolf fantasy, push into, you know, demonic
that's,
fantasy.
Right, that's, your example was that she's content
fantasy.
With anime.
Yeah.
She is,
but
she's
still...
always trying different styles. She's always trying, it's always basically anime, but she's always trying different color filters. She's always trying different
So it'd be the same as she always writes mystery, but she'll write different
that,
things.
That's
yes.
A, yeah, that's a different vein. That is still improving as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going to agree with that. It is, it's, you're writing subgenres. It's like you're writing fantasy and then you decide you're going to write dark
fantasy
and then urban fantasy.
It's almost like if somebody
Swords
never got out of writing fan fiction. Like,
there
there'd be no real point in continuing on that same vein. You want to expand. You want to start creating your own style, even
yeah.
if it's heavily based off of something else.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, write what you want.
Yes. That's always important. And people don't have to improve, even though I would strongly encourage it.
Well, it's fine writing things that you know and writing things you want. Like, a lot of the times that you write stuff that you want, or, you know, you continue to write a certain genre is because you like the tropes in that genre. It has a very eclectic style that speaks specifically to you. And so rather than just enjoying that for what it is, a lot of artists and authors being what they are, you want to contribute to it as well. Put your own drop in the water.
It really sort of boils down to how professional you want to be and how published you want to be.
You can't be a professional doing fanfic.
Well, if somebody doesn't
Fifty Shades.
Sorry.
I don't think it has anything to do with professionalism. I'm sure we could go find some authors that have written only one genre.
Well,
and that's all they
did. I'm going to use.
And then we have other ones that have written many different things.
I'm going to use an author here as fanfic example. He writes essentially the sequels to the Harry Potter series. He has permission from Rowling to do so. He's self-pubbed. I believe that, or he's through a small pub. But he has written a number of books about Harry's kids and their adventures at Hogwarts. And he's making money off of it. And all he's doing is essentially writing fanfics. The fact that he got permission from Rowling to do so is outstanding. Apparently they're not as good, but
it fills the need.
Exactly. And I mean, I think it comes down to just, where do you want to take it? If you're happy with where you are, that's fine, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Look how many different Star Wars books are out there. There's the original books, and then there's so many fan fiction books out there. When they started going number 7, everybody wondered if perhaps it would be off some of those books. Apparently,
yeah,
they
didn't
said
even
no.
Think
but
about that.
There is a vast library of Star Wars books out there, and they are all fan fiction.
Like, it's not to say that fan fiction can't be published or can't be professional, but
we still have to do an episode on fan fiction.
Yeah, we do. But more or less, what I would be concerned about when it comes to improving as a writer would be when you can sit in your basement, you can write all the crappy fan fiction you want, you can write all the good fan fiction you want, you can write whatever and not care one way or the other about improving. But when it comes to being a professional published author, self-pub or otherwise, there comes a point at which you have a presence and then people expect you to improve. And you almost have an obligation to do so. Because you don't want... Well, I guess if it makes your fan base happy, you can pump out the same kind of stuff, you know, time and time again, but it gets tired. People want you to move into other things at some point or another.
And sometimes when you move into another genre, it might be even more successful. There was a urban fantasy writer that I know her from her YA, and it's a steampunk Lovecraftian themed world. It has nothing to do with her urban fantasy. And the thing is that her YA is far more widely regarded as good fiction over her urban fantasy, because guess what? She hit all the themes right for YA, where apparently she was falling short in her urban fantasy.
And sometimes, on the reverse, people don't want you to change at all.
Yeah, you get some pretty angry followers if you were to change.
Well, at the same time, how sad do you get when you know a series you love ends?
Sometimes writing about what you know is about the people reading your stuff, as opposed to writing what you don't know and pissing them off.
Well, I know R.A. Salvador did that with his... I was really young. This is when I first started really getting into the series books. His Silverthorn series. Actually, I guess it was the Rift War saga, because there was the 5 books, wasn't it? Either way, I read it up to the last one, and Darkness at Sethanon, and then I got really upset because I read the next one in the series, and it had kind of nothing to do with the characters that I'd been reading previously. It was, you know, children of their children that kind of made abstract reference to it, and it was like, okay, well, that has nothing to do with the characters that I had an investment in. I'm kind of done with this. So
it really does depend on the writer. I mean,
well, and it does on the reader too, because I was young. I mean, if I were to pick everything up again, I might think differently of it.
Yeah, I mean, Clive Barker decided to go from writing highly sexualized horror to writing children's books.
I still love
it. And it was because he wanted to see if he could, and he wrote some fairly successful children's books, and then he went back to writing horror because, guess what? Everyone wants to know about this one PI. Everyone wants to know about the Cenobites.
He kind of had a mental break at that point. You know, like, I've kind of fulfilled my part on this. I'm burning out. I'm going to write about this infantile series that gives my brain a rest and refreshes me, and suddenly I'm full of all new horrific things that have nothing to do with this little break I had. Like, I don't wonder if he did the young adult books, children books, just because he needed the break.
Could be. That's
a good point. Are you more interested in an author who's going to be writing very similar things, like, you know, like your, like Clive Barker? Are you interested more in the horror he's going to write, or are you more interested in what other projects he'll branch off, or like Stephen King, you know, he's... Or, what are you more interested in an author? Writing the thing that you know the most for, or seeing what else they can do?
I'm writing a urban fantasy author that she's branched off into three different ways, and I love it because every world is different in its own little way, but it's still got her flair to it, so I enjoy reading it because it's the same genre, the same author, but it's different ideas.
But do you prefer more when authors branch off?
Or I
do. You prefer when they go deeper into the worlds that made you love them?
Honestly, it's a little of column A, a little of column B, because I like it when they expand, but at the same degree, Lizanne Norman is like book 8 into the Sholin Alliance series, and honest to God, she could have just ended it about book 5 and spread out on that world, because she's got an entire galactic alliance going on, but it's been so nose deep into the Veltagans, into the Sholins, it's like, okay, I'm kind of done with this. I think everybody should either just die or have a happy ending so the books can just stop.
Well, it's like the James Axler's Deathland series, which branched out into the Outlander series. The reason they decided to branch off into a second series is because into book 60 or 70 of the Deathland series, every book was formulaic. It was an action series. Every book, they pretty much did the exact same bloody things. The characters were always the same. They carried the same weapons. They had the same personality. Nothing changed. Like, and there came a point where I could sit there and read a 250-page book in a couple hours because I knew I could... My brain skimmed over the description of who they were, their weapons, their history. Here's what's happened. Right. Here's what happens. Okay, it doesn't really affect a thing. Here's the end. Blah.
So I guess that what seems to be the case here is a lot like series, like television series that have run on for far too long. Is that once an author gets too comfortable in one particular genre, that maybe they should branch out into something that they're not familiar with because they've simply...
gone stagnant.
Yeah, they've gone stagnant. They're, you know, old dog and no new tricks.
Well, sit.
So.
Sit.
What you do then to write things you don't know?
Research. The internets are your friend at some points.
Experiment, careful. Just like you did in college.
Try writing a new genre. Try writing a genre that you maybe wouldn't try writing in the start.
Or don't research. That could be fun. Mm. But really, the only requirement for writing something you don't know is to try something
different,
unfamiliar with.
Throw it out there. See what the research is.
And this is different than you write vampire fictions, you're going to start writing werewolf fiction. This is, you're writing vampire fiction, write fantasy, or write...
science fiction.
Well,
so you've been writing erotica. Let's try a young adult.
Well, I was actually going to use the reverse example. So you've been writing young adult. Let's try erotica. Yeah.
I've been writing happy romance stories. So let's kill everybody in the next book.
But there's
something
to be...
I kill everybody in my stories and I'm depressing. How about I write something with a happy ending?
Shut up, weirdo.
There's something to be said for writing stuff you don't know, because there's so many topics out there that you're not going to know just a fraction of everything that could be experienced in the entirety of a lifetime in the world's history. We don't have a time machine to go back. We don't have a time machine to go forward. You cannot just jump into another body, another color, another place of the world, live another lifestyle that easily.
It's sort of like when you're a kid and your parents go, how do you know you don't like this if you haven't tried it?
Mm-hmm.
And it really, I think it really just sort of goes into the whole expanding your horizons.
But I can never experience childbirth.
But at the same time, maybe God, you know that you don't want to write erotica. Maybe you... I'm so sick of horror.
Well, this is why our prime suggestion and advice in pretty much most of our episodes is read a variety of genres, read a variety of books, read a variety of time that the books have been written in, just because there are going to be those genres, those things that you read that you go, hey, I really enjoyed that alternative history or historical fiction. Maybe I should try that.
And when I was working with you on Abandoned Places, I was at a point in which I was really interested to find out if I could write horror. I can. I'm just not as into it as you are, so I stopped. And I'm better for that experience.
Yeah.
Because you gave it a try, at the very least.
Yeah. And I know that I like it in small doses.
In writing things that you aren't familiar with, this is one of the suggestions as to why, if you're a furry writer writing non-furry, or if you're a non-furry writer writing furry, one of the best stories in AP is written by a non-fur, because he wanted to try writing furry.
You don't commit yourself to the same kind of tropes when you're not actually a part of that genre.
Exactly. And that's one of the things, is you can bring something completely and utterly fresh to the genre by writing something that maybe you're not used to writing.
And like you were saying, some of the best furry writing, quote-unquote furry writing I've seen, were done by non-furry people. And it's simply because they have a different perspective on things. If you go into something that you're not familiar with, you're looking at it with fresh eyes, not the same old tired eyes that have been into this whatever it is for the past several years.
Sometimes you just write what's there to write. Apparently all I've been writing lately is erotica.
And I've seen how painful it is for you to write.
It's interesting to watch that you really just don't. See, and it's funny to watch.
Take, for example, writing YA for me, this YA project that I've got brewing in my mind. Percolating. There's so much that I have to work on to get myself to that point where I can, in my own mind, write YA without writing the stories that I normally write.
You just need to hang out with my sisters more.
72%. That
you can write a story where no one dies. I believe you.
Oh, no, I can. It's just there's certain themes in that, like,
it's more like we believe that he can write a story without female betrayal.
Death, gruesome murder.
Female betrayal.
Mutilation.
Lovecraftian.
Lovecraftian.
Why not Lovecraft High?
Oh my god, yes! I want to see a teenage Ithaca.
Anyways, yeah. Continuing on.
He's thinking about it now.
No, I was trying to figure out that.
I slipped on your stupid kice again.
The hell, dude? Seriously, you gotta learn to control yourself better.
I let him touch me in bed. That guy is like a cold fish.
Fuck, dude. Yes.
On the subject of, you know, writing things that you don't know, like, when I decided to write, you know, either horror or magic or tarot or superheroes, I know nothing about superheroes, really.
Really?
Except for what I've seen on television, like.
You didn't do the cards or the comic books growing up?
When I came to comic books, it was, like, Archie, Sonic,
Archie, Jughead, Betty and Veronica when they had those two special issues.
Little, like, Sabrina.
I was Richie much Rich. More of a reader. And, like, you know, of course the manga, like Naruto and all that stuff. But I was never much of a comic book reader for, like, the Marvel DC superheroes. And so I have a very uneducated view of how these types of things work, and so my mind doesn't quite think the same when people talk about superheroes.
See, I think that goes kind of going back to what we said about writing what you know, because a lot of people will be like, okay, superheroes, that just means a guy with superpowers saves the day, right? That's all it is. And you're like, no, actually a lot of the good superhero stuff is not just the action, but the emotions that they deal with, the situations where...
The character development.
Yeah, a good character can't do certain things. They have limitations because then they wouldn't be in the justification of good. And it's those elements that you'd only get if you actually read, understood a lot of the good stories
and
out there.
And followed the lines, yeah.
But then you get into the trope of what a superhero is supposed to be, what a supervillain is supposed to be, and what the antihero is supposed to be. So if you have no idea what any of those preconceived notions are, you write something entirely different, and maybe it's awesome. Maybe it sucks. But
it's something new.
It's not what the people that are into this stuff already are used to, which is what makes non-furry-furry writing so good in some cases.
Well, here's a good example along that lines of writing something you know versus don't know / trying new things. You mentioned Archie Comics, and it reminded me something. Archie Comics used to be run by a lot of heavily Christian publishers.
Because they were so polyamorous.
A lot of the head ones, there came up... I was reading an article, this was back in the day, where it was... They wouldn't do certain themes because the head writers were heavily Christian, all that. There came a point recently where they decided that they needed to do something new with Archie. And one of the things that they had come to realize is that there was no... Like, Archie was great and all, but there was no comic for your average 30-something guy who is in between, you know, his teenage years and his midlife.
Young adult. Adult.
Adult. Like, you've entered... Because there's one, apparently, picture of Archie sitting in his bachelor pad on his bed. You know, everything's standard bachelor pad. And he's like, so this is adulthood. And the thing is they went with that genre. They went with that thing as an evolution of what Archie had, and it sold. It sold stupidly well because there was nothing speaking to that audience. So they went into an area where they didn't necessarily know what they were doing and bringing a fresh view into it, plus they were also filling a niche that needed to exist.
Well, look at Simpsons. At the time when it started, people were like, what is this, a cartoon for adults? Like, why would adults want to watch a cartoon, you know?
Yeah,
same with Flintstones.
True.
Flintstones was at first marketed as an adult cartoon. And then after it didn't do well, they marketed it again for kids.
Well, they tried again with
them. Yeah.
You run into similar situations where you have stories meant for kids, but have nuances that cater to adults.
Adventure Time.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Very much so.
So there's definitely things that you can find out there for writing, things you don't know, because you come at it from an angle that the people who do know aren't realizing that they can do that.
It's so easy for people to fall into the trap of writing what you do know that it becomes tired. It is so easy for people to fall into like the same kind of rut when they're writing what they do know that, you know, it's important for people to try out things that they don't know to make them try something new.
I keep thinking about someone who's trapped in a rut, Laurel K. Hamilton with her Anita Blake series, where it's every book is essentially the same thing, even more so when it comes to the sex, because you're getting more and more sex in it because she thinks that's what people want. And it's just she is trapped into this rut. And where before she was doing something relatively unique and presenting all these amazing things, now she's trapped in her own trope, basically. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the things that could end up happening, is being, you end up writing so much of the same thing, you end up being trapped in your own world, your own trope, and
you also end up disillusioning yourself and thinking that people who are criticizing you are not your old readers and don't know anything, and then start insulting your readers. Which was painful.
Yeah.
I think the other part of that is that you won't please everyone.
No.
In that sense. There are people that will raise hell if you so much as stray from the, you know, the same old...
they've read.
And then there are people that will complain because you haven't deviated from your regular story.
Well, it's like the prequels for Star Wars.
Yeah. Perfect example.
Though the best analogy I've read for that is the 4, 5, and 6 were Lucas writing basically a Western slash whatever in space. And then 1, 2, and 3 was Lucas writing what he thought Star Wars was, which is why it didn't hit the same notes, is because he was writing based off of what his perception of Star Wars was rather than...
Isn't that a little ironic that I'm writing a Western in space, now I'm writing something that is an interpretation of something I've already written, but what I gathered from the viewership's point of view.
But that's be one of the problems when you're trapped in your own genre, your own trope, is your own perception of what makes your series popular may not be what is actually making it popular.
Yeah, I guess. But then that's changing the formula.
But to him, he wasn't changing the formula. To him, he was using the same formula that was making a series popular because that's what he thought was popular.
What part of I made a Western birthed Jar Jar Binks?
But that's the thing, is he didn't look back to that.
Should have.
So in the end, there's many, many writing what you know is the general advice given by most people teaching writing. Most of the things you'll find in writing books and from other writers. It's...
Why is that?
Because it's the easier to do.
It's a good place to start. Easier, or is that
like the strongest? Yeah.
No.
It's a good place to start.
I'll go with that. If you're coming in as an amateur writer, then it's a good place to start learning the habits that will benefit you later on. And the best way to do that is to write something you know.
Something you have a vested interest in to begin with.
So that you're not, for example, like you, writing erotica where you're tearing out your hair because it's not really what you want to write. It's far easier to sit there and come into the thing going, I love...
blank.
Blank. I am going to write blank because I enjoy writing blank. And get a couple stories under it and then go... Well, I also like this. Let me try writing this.
If you're trying to expand, you know, who you are as a writer and the types of genres that you're capable of writing, I would argue write what you're unfamiliar with until you're familiar writing it.
Or read what you're unfamiliar with to get an idea.
I may never go back and do horror again, but I know that I know what I'm capable of and that it's perfectly possible to do.
Well, that's one
of... So, what did you learn from writing horror? Specifically, other than I can do it.
You specifically... Well, like, when I started learning about horror, one, I mean, knowing about anatomy is huge. Like, I am not going to cut someone's jugular and then be like, oh, he stumbled around for 3 hours. Because that's just silly. Like, so, you know, different aspects of the... You know, the body that you need to be aware of. Being
biology.
Aware of how to manipulate the reader's feelings differently than I would normally otherwise. Creating that scene, creating that vibe within your story. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have known that I was capable of doing this until I'd actually written the story. Now that I have, I know that I can, and I have no interest in pursuing that anymore. I will move on to something else until I feel confident that I can actually do it. Anyone else?
Strangely enough, I can't think of anything to add on to that.
Well, it's like writing first person present. Even just write your POV, changing that out of something
that
you're not used to.
That will definitely help
teach
shake
you
things
up.
And with Ocean and his erotica, you know you can do it.
Do I?
Well, depends on how...
Well, that depends what you mean by do it. I've written stories. I don't know if the quality of them are good.
But do you feel closer to an understanding of how erotica is written?
I'm getting there.
See, whereas and I don't have a problem writing it or reading it, but I have an issue with action because I have a hard time playing out that speed of a sequence of scenes in my head.
See, I still like action. I still think my action isn't that great, but I can read it and still kind of see where it needs improvement and continue to work at it.
My action still totally needs work.
If I start a horror, I have no idea. It's a blank slate for me. I'm confused why people continue to send me horror to beta read, but I'll do it anyways.
See, I've seen enough in my life that horror just is easy for me.
Well, that's the thing. For me, I don't horror is not interesting to me. I don't want to spend any time of my limited time enjoying, quote unquote, or
perpetuating,
devouring. What's a better intaking horror?
Mm-hmm.
Because it does not appeal to me. So if I were to write a horror, it's really a blank sheet for me because I think tension is important and people like to be scared and usually
and you don't really have the vested interest to dedicate your energies to that.
But like you said before, I don't know what the horror tropes really are other than the really cheesy ones that most people know from anything out there.
And thus it's harder for you to hit the payoff points.
Yeah. Well, like when I beta read your story for the next Trick or Treat,
mm-hmm.
and I read the story, I'm like, hey, this is what I like, this is what I don't. I went through your questions, and one of your questions was, is this scary? Like, is this horror? And I'm like, I actually had to sit there and go, wait, I didn't actually find this scary. Is that good? Is that bad? What does that mean?
I think, you know, your interest in horror sort of reflects on a point that we made earlier in that you don't have to branch out into horror just to write things that you're unfamiliar with. Maybe you want to do space western, like Star Wars would have been. Maybe you want to do, you know, something that still maintains a lot of tension and action.
I plan on writing whatever interests me.
Of course.
As we've been talking about this, I've actually thought about maybe a small idea for a horror piece that I could write one day if it comes around, and I just wrote that idea down.
Nice!
But, and the same with one of my erotica stories that I wrote. It was a story that came to my mind like over a year ago, and I just wanted to write it, and so I did. You know, and I think that's how some people do write things that isn't part of what they normally write, is that they have an idea and they go, that's not really what I do, but I like this idea.
Well, it's like the idea I have for the YA is just three things that I was doing at work. Just imagery, having a pretend gun battle with phantoms in the warehouse because I was bored and whatnot. And it was just like, it just came together and I said, this would be an awesome book idea. And then I thought of it a bit more and it was like, this has to be a YA book. Shit. Because for me to tone down to YA from what I normally write, erotica slash horror, means I have to tone down a lot of the themes and the plot points that I'm used to doing for something completely mellower.
So.
Yeah. Woo!
So there's a lot of advantages to writing what you want and writing what you don't want. Well, you know, what you're used to in that. You know, take the write what you know with a grain of salt. There's some truth to it, but at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can't branch out and write something that no one would ever experience in a normal world or that you would never be able to experience. Know that it's a bit of uncharted territory, but at the same time, you can overcome that with research, talking to people with experiences, and just trying to go in depth. Yeah, reading about it. And just trying to figure out what it would be like.
Hell, take a stab at it, put it online, and see what kind of interest you garner.
I'm pretty sure there's lots of authors out there that have written a story from the point of view of someone who dies in the end. And I'm pretty sure none of them were dead when the time they wrote it.
Guilty!
Like, it's a good path just to make sure that you don't just become a one-trick pony.
But if this is your first story, or first maybe three stories, start off writing what you know. It will be easier once you're comfortable doing that, then start writing what you don't know.
I should also point out that it is a little bit easier if you can combine the thing with what you don't know with what you do know.
Isn't it ironic that the first piece I got published was dead erotica?
And, you know, the odds are is that you as a writer are probably at some point going to get bored with the content that you're writing and you're going to try something anyway. So it's, you know, it can evolve naturally. It can take as long as you want. You can do something different tomorrow.
Well, let's face it. One point of being a writer is you've probably got a pretty active imagination. I'm betting you can put that to good use and just do it.
Awesome. Yeah. And all in all, just write.
Just
write whatever you want.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Kick him in the knee. That's all I can reach.
I think that's it from us.
Horse meat beat stick. I think we're there.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks so much.
Next month we'll Well, hopefully, we know 3 out of 4 of us are confirmed for RF. We're hoping to go on the 4th. So if you guys will be there, you can come find us.
Oh, please come find us.
Some of us will probably be in panels we haven't heard about. 2 of us are in the anthology. And we're fingers crossed that there might be a panel or not, too, yeah, for us. But either way, if you guys are at RF, we'll see you there. Otherwise, you can always write in to us. Tell us your topics you want to hear, guests you'd like on. And I should note that if you want a guest on, and we apologize that we don't have too many guests, is because we have technical issues that we're still trying to figure out. Suggest why you'd like that guest on. Like, what would you like us to talk with them about? Because that also helps. our website is fangsandfonts.com. You can contact us with suggestions, complaints, comments, anything else. We love to hear from you guys. Email us at podcast@fangsandfonts.com. We're at Twitter and Facebook. Otherwise, yeah, all those fun sites.
All the sites.
Otherwise, we'll catch you guys later.
Bye.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
It's a very interesting genre.
No one likes Brussels sprouts.
I love Brussels sprouts.
Oh, man, Taro.
You put so much butter on the Brussels sprouts. It's like you eat the butter. The Brussels sprouts are just a boat for the butter.
No, I eat Brussels sprouts plain.
Bleh.
Without anything. Salt, pepper, butter. Cabbage. They are mini cabbage. They're delicious like cabbage mini
cabbage. I'll take my asparagus, please.
Yeah, oh, yes. Asparagus.
Yes. Beets. So. I love beets.
I don't really like beets.
I think the best is when he eats beets and forgot that he ate beets, and then he's in the bathroom and, oh yeah, I ate beets.
Anyway.
Let's talk about carrots. Don't you like borscht? Turnips?
I don't like borscht.
I don't like turnips. Asparagus is quite good.
I haven't had turnips in forever.
His stepmom makes a really good borscht.
I can just take him down the hall.
Fuck this podcast. I'm going to fuck something else.
Thump. That's our opening.
You're welcome.
I like the way he thinks. We should go home. All right. If you're going to keep doing this, I'm
going
to go use the washroom.
Beats.
Oh, God. And it's done.
It's too bad Callie doesn't fit under the table because that would be hilarious.